Good afternoon. I think it's 1 minute after noon. I'm trying to decide if I should say good morning or good afternoon. What is a slave? That's the question today. We live in the land of the free, or at least we like to think we live in the land of the free. Perhaps it's not as free as it used to be. Our freedoms are being eroded more and more each day. But we still like to think that we are a free people. So the thought of slavery is a foreign thought to most of us. And when we do think about slavery, I think most of us have images that come to mind of like the pre-war South. We have images of African slaves working in chain gangs. And of course, this was an awful and horrible part of this country's past. It was a combination of racism and exploitation. But slavery in the ancient Roman time, in biblical times, was a little bit different. Even though that's what we may think of when we think of slavery. Slavery in the ancient Roman times was a little bit different than that. There are some things that there was in common, but there was also a lot of things that were different. Slaves in biblical times were people who were under legal authority to their master. Sometimes they were captured in wars. Other times they were free people that had sold themselves into slavery to pay off debts. Other times they were children of slaves that were born into the master's house. But the slaves of that time were dependent for their safety and security from their master. And because of this, the type of life, the lifestyle of that slave depended solely on what type of master that they had. We know through scriptures that some of the masters were kind and gentle masters, while others were very harsh and cruel masters. The experience of a slave depended entirely on who his master was. His quality of life depended entirely on who his master was. There was also transfer between a slave and a free person. The freeing of slaves was a common practice. It did not happen for everyone, but it was possible for many to be freed. Freed slaves sometimes would even enter business arrangements with their former masters, former owners. And slaves could also buy their own freedom by working to accrue money to pay off their debts and buy their own freedom. But there was also a transfer in another direction. People could sell themselves into slavery if they had too many debts and they couldn't pay them off. The slavery of biblical times was very different than what we may think of when we think of slavery. But the analogy of slave and master, that analogy of slave and master is throughout the Bible, throughout the Old and New Testament. It appears all over the New and the Old Testament. In fact, the word slave appears 1,100 times in the Bible, if you count the times that it's translated as servant and bondservant. And in the New Testament, you can find the Greek word doulios, which means slave, 150 times. It's not always transferred as slave. Sometimes it's transferred as servant or bondservant. But it's all from the same word, doulios, the Greek word doulios, which means slave. I looked it up in the Strong Concordance. And its primary meaning, that word, doulios, its primary meaning is slave, not servant. Not bondservant, but slave. I want you to turn over to Matthew 25, verse 23. And here we'll see an example of that word, doulios, being used. And if you have a King James Version or a New King James Version, I think both of them translate it as servant. Matthew 25, verse 23, it says, "His Lord said to him, 'Well done, good and faithful servant.'" There's the word, servant. But as I said before, that is the Greek word doulios, if you look in your concordance. And its primary translation should be slave, not servant. "You have been faithful over a few things. I will make you ruler over many things. Enter into the joy of the Lord." The word servant used here is from the Greek word doulios, as I said. And according to the Strong's Concordance, I have that program on my computer. What's it called? I don't even remember. But you can just click on the word and it tells you from Strong's what its translation should be. And its primary translation should be slave. And in my mind, anyway, a servant is not a slave. I think there's a difference. And I think sometimes when we read these translations in the English, sometimes it has a different connotation. There's a big difference between servant and slave. To illustrate this point, think about this. Christ said, "No man can serve two masters." But you could serve two masters if you were a servant. If you were a servant, you could serve two masters. You could serve two people. You could have a day job and a night job. A lot of people work for more than one person. But you could not be a slave to two masters, because you can only be owned by one person. To my mind, anyway, a servant is someone who is paid and serves. He could serve in the daytime for one person, in the nighttime for other. But a slave is someone who's owned. He is completely owned, and he only has one master. That's the difference. The writers of the New Testament talked about slavery all the time. The Christian life is often compared to the slave and master relationship. But many times the word is translated as servant instead of slave. Even though the word used for both is the same word, as I mentioned, doulos, which means slave. When we talk about terms used to describe Christians in the New Testament, we have terms like the children of God, heirs and joint heirs. We are called members of the body of Christ. We are called branches, and even sheep. But I think perhaps the best way to describe the relationship we have with Jesus Christ is slave and master. Because as we have seen and will see as we go through the sermon today, it is a thread that's throughout the New Testament, that term slave and master. Turn over to Romans 10, verse 9. Romans 10, verse 9. Romans 10, verse 9. Here we will see the corresponding word to slave, and that, of course, is master. Romans 10, verse 9. That if you confess with your mouth the Lord Jesus and believe in your heart that God has raised him from the dead, you will be saved. It says you will be saved if you confess Jesus is Lord. I looked up this word again here, the word Lord, and this word is the Greek word kurios, which is, of course, the corresponding word to doulos, slave, and it means master. It means the Lord and Master. That's what kurios means, and that's what the word translated Lord there in verse 9 is, Master. I think sometimes when we read the English or these translations in the New King James and King James, it gives a different connotation. If we think of it as slave and master, I think we get a different connotation in our minds. So Jesus Christ is kurios, which means master, and we are doulos, which means slave. There's no such thing as a master with no slaves, and there's no slave without a master. Sometimes we like to think of Jesus Christ as a servant, here to serve us, here to take care of us, here to take care of our wishes. Whatever we ask him, he should do for us, whatever our wishes and our desires are, like a genie that pops out of a bottle when we rub it, gives us our wishes. Whatever we want, whatever we ask, he will do for us. But the New Testament teaches the exact opposite of that. In fact, it says, and it teaches us, that he is the master, and we are his slaves. We are here to do his bidding, not the other way around. Romans 1, verse 1 now. Romans 1, verse 1. And I'm going to read this in the King James Version. Again, the words translated slightly different. Romans 1, verse 1. It says, Paul, a servant of Jesus Christ, called to be an apostle, separated from the gospel of God. So Paul himself called himself a servant of Jesus Christ. And here's that word again. It's the same word for servant, doulos, the Greek word doulos, which primary meaning, as we mentioned already, is slave. So Paul called himself a slave of Jesus Christ. That is what all the apostles were. Jesus is looking for slaves today, not servants. There's a difference between a servant and a slave, as I already mentioned. But there's another difference. A servant works for pay. A slave gets nothing in return. A slave gets nothing in salary and expects nothing from his master. God does not want servants to expect something in return for their service. He wants only slaves. Those who are willing to do his work without expecting anything in return. Christ never offered any salary to those who he called apostles. We are called to be slaves working for our masters without pay. If we feel like we have a right to the comforts and conveniences, then we are not a slave. We are a servant. A slave has no right to anything. If God gives us a house to live in, we are thankful. But we don't serve him so that he will give us a house to live in. If he gives us food to eat, we are thankful. But we don't serve him expecting him to give us food to eat. If God gives us good health, again, we are thankful. But we don't serve him with an expectation that he's going to give us good health. A slave expects nothing from his master. A servant expects to be paid for his service. There's a big difference, at least in my mind, there's a difference. But maybe we don't want to be a slave. Doesn't exactly sound like a great way to live as a slave. Maybe we don't want to be a slave. After all, being a slave does not sound all that appealing to me. You may say, I was born free, and I'm going to go out that way. Live free or die. That may be your motto. I think that's the state motto of New Hampshire. There are many in our country that believe that you'd have to be a fool to want to be a slave to Jesus Christ. Why would you want to be a slave when you could be free? They mock religion and they work hard to undermine the religious upbringing of our kids. They believe that a life without religion is more liberating, more freeing. A life without all those rules and regulations. That's true freedom. That's what many believe. So they replace God's standards with standards of their own. They want to be free of God's authority, so they themselves can be the authority. They can be their own authority. We see that in this country today. We see this in our government. Those who want to silence Christianity. Politicians want to be perceived as the ultimate authority, so the citizens will look to them as their master. Look to them as their provider, instead of looking to the true master, Jesus Christ. According to the U.S. Census Bureau, the number of Americans that claim they have no religion more than doubled between 1990 and 2008. More than doubled. And the younger you are, the more likely you are to not be affiliated with any religion. The same census said that only 9% of all U.S. adults that are over 65 have no religious affiliation. So if you're over 65, only 9% say that they're not religious. But if you're under the age of 30, it's 32% say that they're unaffiliated with any religion. So you can see the trend. 32% say they don't want anything to do with religion if they're under 30. But only 9% of the older generation say the same thing. So you can see where this country is headed. Satan is winning the hearts of many in our country. They are pledging their allegiance to the wrong master. Secularism is winning the hearts of many of our young people. Turn over to John chapter 8 now. John chapter 8, verses 31 and 32. Then said Jesus to the Jews which believed on him, if you continue in my word, then you are disciples indeed. And you shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free. But apparently those words irritated the crowd, because in verse 33, they answered him. We be Abraham's seed, and we were never in bondage to any man. How sayest thou, you shall be made free? The Jews were saying, we don't want your freedom. No one has authority over us. We're already free. We are slaves to no one. But then in verse 34, Jesus replied. Jesus answered them, verily, verily, I say unto you, whoever commits sin is a servant of sin. There's that word again, doulos, a servant. It is translated in the King James anyway as servant, but it really means slave. We are a slave to sin. If we commit sin, we are a slave to sin. So even if you think you can reject God and be free, you are fooling yourself. Because you are then going to be a slave of sin. You're not going to be free at all. And that is where the world is at right now. There are many who think that by rejecting the Judeo-Christian teachings, God's law, that they can become free. Free from all that bondage. But in reality, they're just becoming slaves to something else. Slaves to sin. Turn over to Romans 6 now. I'm going to spend just a couple minutes here in Romans 6. I'm going to read verses 16 to 22. I'm going to be reading in the New King James Version again. Romans 6, verses 16 to 22. Do you know that to whom you present yourself slaves to obey, you are that one slave whom you obey, whether of sin leading to death or obedience leading to righteousness? The word slave here is that same word again, doulos. But for some reason in the New King James, it's translated slaves here instead of servants. I think in the King James it might even be servants, I'm not sure. But God be thanked that though you were slaves of sin, that you obeyed from the heart that form of doctrine to which you were delivered. And having been set free from sin, you become slaves of righteousness. I speak in human terms because of the weakness of the flesh. For just as you presented your members as slaves of uncleanness and lawlessness, leading to more lawlessness. So now present your members as slaves of righteousness for holiness. For when they were slaves of sin, you were free in regard to righteousness. What fruit did you have then in the things which you were now ashamed? For the end of those things is death. But now, having been set free from sin, you have become slaves of God, and have your fruit in holiness. In the end is everlasting life. Now, this is kind of hard to follow. You go through these couple scriptures here, it's kind of hard to follow. But basically what he is saying is that everyone is slave to something. No one is really free. You're all slave to something. Either you're a slave to sin, which means you're free from God, or you're a slave to God, which means you're free from sin. There's no other option. Despite what many people might want to believe, the opposite of being slave to God is not freedom. You're not free. God tells us that if you free yourself from obeying God, you will be a slave to sin. You can try to deny it. You can try to fight it. You can try to reject it. You can do whatever you want, but it's still going to be true. If you're not a servant of God, you are a servant to sin. Now, there are two things I think we can learn about slavery here. Two quick things. First, slavery is inevitable. You can't avoid it. You're going to be a slave one way or the other. And number two, slavery takes effort. Either for the good or for the bad, it takes effort. First, slavery is inevitable. Every person serves somebody or something. In verse 16 we just read, he explains that. Do you not know that to whom you present yourself slaves to obey, you are that one slave whom you obey, whether of sin leading to death or obedience leading to righteousness? Whether it's a person, a possession, or activity, we become slaves to whoever or whatever we present ourselves to. Being neutral is impossible. There are only two options, sin or obedience. This means there are only two types of slaves. Slaves of sin, resulting in death, and slaves of obedience, resulting in righteousness. There's no third option. Paul is saying, I have good news and I have some bad news. The bad news is that we're all slaves. None of us are free. We are all in bondage to whatever controls our lives. And not only is slavery inevitable, but also Paul also tells us that slavery takes effort on our part, either for the good or for the bad. To be Christ's slave requires intentional effort, and that's in verse 19, Romans 6, verse 19. I speak in human terms because of the weakness of your flesh. For just as you presented your members as slaves of uncleanness and of lawlessness, leading to more lawlessness, so now present your members as slaves of righteousness for holiness. We need to make an effort to change. There's an effort involved. And to become slaves of righteousness instead of lawlessness, an effort is required. And there's also a result that happens, and that's in verse 22. But now, having been set free of sin and having become slaves of God, so if we put forth that effort and we become slaves of God, you have your fruit in holiness, and the end, of course, is everlasting life. The result of slavery to God is everlasting life. It says right here in verse 16 that you are a slave to whatever it is you obey. If you obey God, you are a slave to God. If you obey sin, you are a slave to sin. There is no in between. Either the light is on and the room is light, or it's off and it's pitch black. There's no in between. Now, the question I have with all of this in mind is, what does this really mean? Why would rejecting God and his authority in my life enslave me? Why would this happen? And enslave me to what? What exactly would I be enslaved to? And why would it be so bad? If I reject God and choose sin instead, I know I will become a slave to sin. But why would that be such a bad thing? Well, let's take a look at what you would really be enslaving yourself to if you choose the way of sin. First, if you reject God, you will not only be a slave to sin, but you will be a slave to the hopelessness that goes with that sin. Turn over to Ephesians 2, verse 12. There's hopelessness that you will also be enslaved to. Ephesians 2, verse 12. Remember that at the time you were separate from Christ, excluded from citizenship in Israel, and foreigners to the covenants of his promise, without hope and without God in this world. Without God in this world, there is no hope. When we separate from Christ, we are without hope. We become slaves to hopelessness. What happens if your life depends solely on you? If you no longer are a slave to Christ, but you're out there on your own, and your life depended solely on yourself. You no longer have that master to protect you, that master that you're serving to protect you and to guide you. It might be okay for a little while as long as life is going along smoothly. But what happens when life isn't going smoothly anymore? When you have bumps and bruises and life robs you of your dreams. For those people who reject God, the words, "The Lord is my shepherd," has no meaning. Has no meaning at all. And because there is no shepherd in their lives, in those times of darkness, there is no one to lead them out. Imagine what life would be without God. What would your life look like without God in your life? There is no good shepherd to guide us through the valley of the shadows of darkness and death. And without the shepherd, there is no hope. Becoming a slave to sin means becoming a slave to hopelessness as well. Secondly, people who reject God are slaves to their own mortality. Not only are they slaves to hopelessness, but they're slaves to their own mortality. They are enslaved because they have no reason to live, no purpose to their life, no Savior, no life beyond this one we're living now. The Bible tells us that you and I were created in the image of God. We are unique above all other creation because we have the Spirit of God dwelling within us. But if God didn't create you and I, and we were merely random accident, created out of pond scum and dirt or whatever you want to believe, if it's just a random accident, there is no more purpose for our life or no more purpose for our living than that like of a fly or a grasshopper who is here one day and gone the next. Without God, we have no true value. We live, we suffer, we die, and we face nothing but an eternity of darkness. People without God in their life are enslaved to hopelessness. Being a slave to sin means being a slave to death. And that leads us to the real head scratcher here today. We all desperately want to be free. We want to be free of death, free of despair, free of hopelessness. But to be free from these things, we must first be willing to be slaves. That's the conundrum. That's the paradox. A real paradox here is that to be truly free, we must first become a slave. Even in the animal world, animals desire for freedom. Animals desire to be free. Given the chance, most animals will leave their cage in the safety for a chance at freedom. Humans long for freedom as well. We yearn to enjoy life, free from guilt, free from despair, free from death. We want to live a life that means something beyond what's here and now. God has created us to yearn and want to be free. Yet the paradox is that we are freed from the slavery of sin only if we become slaves to God. And if we decide to become free from the slavery of Jesus Christ, we will find out that our lives will become worthless. We will be slaves to hopelessness. So it's kind of a paradox. To be free, we must be a slave. But if we free ourselves, then we become a slave to something else. And our lives will become worthless, as I mentioned, if we decide to be free from our master, Jesus Christ. And I brought something here to help show this point. Maybe some of you know what this is. It's kind of dirty, gross. I pulled it out of the barn this morning. What that is a carburetor. Most of you probably know what a carburetor is. It sits, maybe not all of you, most of you probably. It sits on top of a motor, and its job is to mix the fuel and air so that it can be sucked down through the carburetor into the intake, out to the heads, so we can have combustion, the motor can run. That's the job of a carburetor. But the carburetor can actually teach us something about what it means to be free, believe it or not. And that freedom isn't always the best thing. We all yearn to be free. Sometimes we yearn to be free from the wrong things. Some in this world yearn to be free from Jesus Christ, learn to be free from his laws. But freedom isn't always a good thing. This carburetor right here is absolutely free. It is no longer attached to the car. It no longer has to go where the car goes. It no longer has to stop when the car stops. It no longer has to work for the car. It no longer has to mix fuel and help the car to run. It no longer has to filter fuel or open up the throttle plates that are there on the bottom so the car can accelerate. It no longer has to be bolted to the car or be part of the car to do its job. It no longer has to serve or work for the car any longer because it's off. It's unbolted. It's free. It's absolutely, positively free. And it's absolutely, positively worthless. It's absolutely, positively worthless sitting there on the lectern. It has no purpose. It has absolutely no purpose. No one will ever use it again. And no one will ever want it again. Because it's free. It is now worthless. And it has no value. It is free from the car. No more slavishly working to mix the fuel from the motor. And now it is worthless. It is empty. And it has no value to anyone. If you want to become free like this carburetor is free, free from God's laws, unattached, free and clear, you can do that. We have that choice. But your life will be just like this carburetor, free, but it will also be worthless and empty. Hopelessness enslaves those who reject God's laws, feeling that their life will amount to nothing. They believe that there is nothing more than what they see here today. In their minds, when we die, all we face is eternal darkness. That's what it means to be a slave to hopelessness, a slave to sin, a slave to death. What a terrible way to live your life. When I was thinking about this topic for the sermon today, it got me to thinking about a good friend of mine. He's one of my basketball buddies, as Renita would call it. She calls them my basketball buddies. Some of you here I know him. In fact, there's a number of you here that already know him. His name is Greg, and I've known him for a long time. I know that Brandon knows him very well. Of course, Ethan, Colton, Jake, Sam. I think even Lee knows him. Probably Ben, maybe Justin. A lot of us here know this man. We have played basketball together for many, many years, as I said. And in a lot of ways, he's a lot like me. And when I was thinking about this sermon today, I got to thinking about him and the situation he's in. He's only a couple years older than I am, and he lives only a few miles from us. He lives just on the other side of Troxville. He has a small farm, and he raises beef, just like I do. Obviously, he likes sports, and he loves to play basketball, just like I do. And as I mentioned before, he's only a couple years older than me. He hunts and fishes. That's his favorite things to do. He built his own house. And he works on his own cars. We have a lot in common. He's one of the few people that I can actually sit down and have a conversation. You know, just easy, relaxed conversation. I find it hard, you may have noticed, to have conversations with a lot of other people. But we have so much in common that I can just sit and talk to him. He is also a man of great faith. We've talked about religion many times over the years at the basketball court. And he's been over to my house and I've been over to his house. But he told me this last Tuesday night at the gym that the doctors told him that his wife has less than a year to live. Or at least that's their estimation, less than a year to live. This, of course, came to a shock to me. I knew his wife had skin cancer. Probably 8 months ago, he told me she had skin cancer. And she had surgery to treat the cancer, and they had removed it, but apparently it's come back, and it's come back worse than before. And the doctors tell her that there's nothing that they can do. Basically, live out your life. It's probably going to be less than a year, is what he told me. He, of course, asked me to pray for her and pray for him. He is, as I mentioned, a very religious man. And, of course, I would like to pass that on to all of you as well. Like I said, many of you know him. Greg Heater is his name. His wife's name is Melanie Heater. And they would appreciate all of our prayers. So you can put that on your prayer list, all of us, even those that don't know him. I know they would both appreciate the prayers very much because he told me the only thing he has left is prayer. That's the only hope he has left. The reason I wanted to, or that I was thinking about this, with this topic today, was because I got to thinking, if I was in that situation, how would I feel? Can you imagine being a slave to hopelessness at a time like that? Can you imagine being a person a secularist in this world, one who decided that there is no God, that I don't want to be a slave to those laws, to those ways of life. I want to be free. But in reality, they aren't free, are they? Because we know that you are a slave to something. You're either a slave to God or you're a slave to sin. You're either a slave to righteousness or you're a slave to hopelessness. Can you imagine what it would be, how it would feel if you were in that situation and you were a slave to hopelessness at a time like that? If you were in his shoes. If you were in his shoes and you had chosen to be free from God like so many do today and chose to not have a shepherd to walk you through the dark valley of death. Instead, chose to be free from God. You would then be a slave to hopelessness, a slave to despair, a slave to the emptiness that those who reject God must feel when a loved one is dying. How horrible it would be to be free from the good shepherd at a time like that. It would be horrible to be a free person if you were in a situation like that. You would want to be a slave. You would want to have a master, a caring master, a master who can lead you out of a situation like that. Slavery to Jesus Christ is freedom from death. Slavery to Jesus Christ is freedom from despair in our darkest hours. Those who demand to be free from God are actually enslaved. They're enslaved because they have no God and they have no hope. They're enslaved because they have no purpose or value in their life. And they're enslaved because without Jesus Christ, they are held captive by their sins. John 8, verse 34. If you want to turn over to John 8, verse 34. I tell you the truth, everyone who sins is a slave to sin. Without Christ's sacrifice, there is no way to get away from our sins. Without Christ, there is no forgiveness, no way to remove our past deeds. And without Christ's sacrifice, we would be slaves to our sins and slaves to that hopelessness. True freedom is slavery to Christ. Because it is freedom from hopelessness, freedom from despair, freedom from pain and suffering, and freedom from death. So we have talked about the fact that we are all slaves. None of us are free people. We're either slaves to sin or we are slaves to Jesus Christ. Either we are slaves to righteousness or we are slaves to sin. And if we choose righteousness, then of course we choose Jesus Christ as our master. Turn to John 15, verse 14. John 15, verse 14. Here in John 15, Christ takes it a little bit further, this analogy of slave and master. He takes it another step, a step further. John 15, verse 14. You are my friends if you do what I command you. So not only are we slaves, now we're friends if you do what I command you. So here he calls us friends. But doesn't it seem odd that he says, I'd love to be your friend, but I just have one requirement. You can be my friend if you do exactly what I command you to do. Now you might think, well, what kind of friendship is that? Most of us don't have friends go up to somebody and say, well, I'd like to be your friend, but you're going to have to do exactly what I tell you to do if you want to be my friend. That's not the kind of friendship that most of us are used to. So it must imply that there's a prior relationship. There's another relationship besides just friendship. If I'm in charge of you and I command you and you obey me, you're not just a friend, you're my slave. But you're a slave who has been given the privilege of also being my friend. Let's look at the next verse, verse 15. Very next verse. It says, no longer do I call you slaves. So again, we are slaves. For a slave does not know what his master is doing. But I have called you friends. For all things that I have heard from my Father, I have made known to you. So what's the difference here? We are still slaves. The difference is now we have become friends. And the distinction is between just being a slave and being a slave who is a friend is that a typical slave doesn't know what his master is doing. He has no reason. He is not giving a reason. He is not given the motivation. He is not given the big picture. He's simply a slave and told what to do. Do this, do that. The master of a slave doesn't have to give him his agenda, his motivation, his purpose, or his plan. But once a slave becomes a friend, as well as a slave, then, read verse 15 again, no longer do I call you slaves, for a slave does not know what his master is doing, but I call you friends, for all these things I have heard from my Father I have made known to you. So we're slaves who have been given the privilege of being friends. It means, and what that means is, he is in charge, he commands, we obey. But he commands us, and then he tells us why he is doing what he is commanding us to do. He doesn't just give us orders and expect us just to listen to the orders, because we are now friends and slaves. He tells us why. He gives us the big picture. We see the vision. We see the end of the game. We know what's going to happen. He is our master. We are his slaves. We are also his friends. The word master here in the Greek is kurios, and it means absolute ruler, a sovereign ruler, the master. And he is that master. Turn to Luke 9 now. Luke 9, verse 23. He is our only master. As I mentioned before, the difference between a servant and a slave is a servant can have many masters. A servant can work for someone during the day, another person at night. But a slave can only have one master, because he is owned, and he is bought, and he is paid for by that master. Verse 9, verse 23. Then he said to them all, "If anyone desires to come after me, let him deny himself and take up the cross and follow me." We are no longer in charge. You must become, when you become a slave to Jesus Christ, he is the master. Our life is not defined by our own wants, our own will, or our own desires, but is defined by his will, his desires, and his purpose. And it is the job of the slave to do what he is told. We are slaves, which means we are owned. Like I said, that's the difference between a servant and a slave. We are owned. We are bought. That is the main difference between a servant and a slave. A servant works for someone for compensation. A slave is owned. He is bought with a price. And he will expect nothing in return from his master. That is why it is important to realize that the word doulos in the Greek primarily means slave, and not servant, as it is translated many times in the English here. We are slaves, and we are bought and paid for by Jesus Christ. We are owned by Jesus Christ. When you go to buy a slave, you go to a slave market. Slaves go up on the block for sale. You want to buy a slave, you go there to the slave market. You pick your slave, then you pay for the slave, then you take your slave home. You then control your slave, and you provide for the slave, and you protect your slave, and you discipline your slave. And you reward the slave for good work. That's how slavery works. Sometimes what the master does not make sense to us. Like in the case of my friend with his wife and the cancer coming back and her sickness. But he is the master, even though sometimes what the master does not make sense to the slaves. He is the master, and we have to accept that what he is doing is best in the long run for us. He chose us, then he paid a price to purchase us. And of course, it wasn't with silver or gold that he paid the price. It was with his blood. He paid the price with his blood. We are not our own any longer. We are bought with a price. And what a blessing it is to have a master that is willing to give his own life and his own blood to purchase us and for us to be his slaves. So when you look at it in this connotation, it doesn't seem so bad to be a slave if we have a loving and merciful master that we do. Turn over to Philippians now. Philippians chapter 2. Philippians chapter 2, verses 5 to 7. "Let this mind be in you, which was also in Jesus Christ, who being in the form of God, did not consider it robbery to be equal with God, but made himself of no reputation, taking the form," so Jesus Christ here, "took the form of a bondservant, and coming in the likeness of men." And the word bondservant here in verse 7 is again that same word, doulos. It means slave. So even Jesus Christ came to this earth and became a slave. A slave to serve his Father, to do his Father's work, to do his Father's bidding. And just before Jesus Christ was crucified, he said in Luke 22, verse 42, you'll need to turn there. It's a verse we all know very well. Luke 22, verse 42, Christ said, "Father, if it is your will to take this cup away from me, nevertheless, not my will, but your will be done." And that is the attitude of a faithful slave. It is not my will, but your will be done. Christ came to be a slave as well, and that was his attitude. Not your will, but my will be done. And that's the example that we can follow as we are slaves, as I mentioned, to Jesus Christ. So the big question for us today is, what master will you serve? We all know that we are a master, or that we are servant or a slave to someone or something. There is no neutral ground. Either the light is on or the light is off. Who will you serve? Either a slave to sin or you are a slave to righteousness, one or the other. We know that you will be a slave, either a slave to Jesus Christ or a slave to sin and a slave to hopelessness. Which will you choose? Turn over to Joshua, just in closing. Read a couple scriptures and a little lesson here in Joshua. Joshua chapter 24. I think it's fitting at this time of year to kind of look back to the ancient Israelites and their story for just a minute. As I said, I'm going to close on these couple scriptures, looking back at the ancient Israelites here in Joshua 24. They were slaves as well as we are slaves. But of course, they were more in a physical sense slaves, and we are more in the spiritual sense slaves. And they were fleeing from their old masters in Egypt, just as we flee from sin, from our old master sin. And they were fleeing to a new place, and they wanted to serve a new master. Let's read in Joshua 24, verses 5 and 6. Also, I sent Moses and Aaron, and I plagued Egypt according to what I did among them. Afterward, I brought you out. Then I brought your fathers out of Egypt, and you came to the sea, and the Egyptians pursued your fathers and their chariots and horsemen to the Red Sea. So they were leaving the bondage that they had known, just as we leave the bondage that we have known. And they were being delivered away from their old masters, but the old master was still pursuing them, just as sin still pursues us as we leave the old master to serve the new. They were leaving one master behind in order to serve a new one, just like we do. And in verse 7, they cried out to the Lord. And God, of course, we know from the story, saved them. In verses 8 to 13, they had many different battles and they had many victories. And then in verses 14 and 15, Joshua realized that it was time for them to make a commitment. It was time for them to serve a new master. It was time for them to no longer be slaves in Egypt, but to serve a new master and to become a slave to a new master. Joshua 24, verses 14 and 15. Now therefore, fear the Lord, serve him in sincerity and in truth, and put away the gods which your fathers served on the other side of the river and in Egypt. Serve the Lord. And if it seems evil to you to serve the Lord, choose for yourself this day whom you will serve. Whether the gods which your fathers served that were in the other side of the river, or the gods of the Amorites in whose land you dwell. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. And of course, that's a very famous part of scripture there. Joshua realized that it was time to choose. It was time to get away from the old master. To move away. We've been delivered from that old master, but now it's time to serve a new master. Joshua realized it was time to choose. Who will be your master? Will your master be sin? Will your master be hopelessness? Will your master be pain? Will your master be despair? Or will your master be Jesus Christ? It must be one or the other. There is no in between. It's either sin, your master, or righteousness is your master. Jesus Christ bought and paid for you with his blood. That is what the Passover pictures. You are no longer a free man or a free woman. You are now a slave to Jesus Christ. And what a blessing it is to have such a caring and merciful master to serve. I want to close with just reading one final verse, and I'll be done. One final verse. And you'll notice that I don't use the King James translation. I changed that word doulos to the word slave, which I think is what should be translated as. Matthew 25, verse 21. You don't need to turn there. I'll just read it. His Lord said to him, "Well done, good and faithful slave. You were faithful over a few things. I will make you ruler over many things. Enter into the joy of your Lord."